take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, January 6, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. It's also got to be my medium brother Matt's birthday. Happy 44th birthday to my brother out there, still kicking it in Meridian, Idaho, of all places. We got a great show for you today. Lots of information and subjects to cover on today's show. Oh my God. At the end of the show today, we're going to take a time in the Radical Rant to talk about what do we do now, now that we've gotten legalization. You know, I worked for Normal for 4 years, and one thing that people used to always ask is, well, after you get it legalized, then what are you going to do? You're going to put yourself out of a job. No, folks, I think this is where the work begins when it comes to marijuana reform activism. It's not good enough to be legal. We got to fight for equalization. We're going to talk about that at the end of the show. Also on the show today at half past, we're going to have a cannabis community chat and take a look at the events around Ferguson, Eric Garner, the NYPD, all of that that's been blown up across this country. And I'm going to posit the notion that you cannot even begin to address the problems of racism and over-policing in this country until you legalize drugs. We'll talk about that at half past. Also on the show today, we have got a report from our correspondent, Freddie Farrakh, a stupid prohibition story coming to you from where? Well, where else? Florida. What did you expect? That's coming up on the show today. Also, we're going to go behind the headlines and take a look at the state of Ohio, where they're looking to possibly enshrine a marijuana cartel monopoly as the form of legalization there in America's seventh largest state by population. We'll tell you the whys and wherefores of that when we get to behind the headlines, which comes right after the 420 radio news, which is right after this first break. And in the headlines today, we're going to take a look at legalization in the state of Arizona, possibly through its legislature rather than an initiative. We've also got an initiative being put forth in Mississippi, of all places, to legalize marijuana. Got some news on that for you. In Colorado, they've begun an advertising campaign to help raise awareness of the laws around legal marijuana in the Centennial State. In Seattle, the other of the 2012 states to legalize, Seattle's city attorney, Pete Holmes, has come out with a new memo on moving marijuana policy forward. We'll give you the details on that. And in Alaska, another one of the legal states, we've got at least one delivery service that is openly selling pot in Alaska. This is not exactly legal, according to the police. We'll give you the details on that in the 420 radio news coming up right after this first break. And then in hour two, we'll do Toker Talk Radio. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. On the show today in Toker Talk Radio, we've got word of a Bud of the Month Club that's opening up, a delivery service opening up in San Francisco. Also, we're going to take a look at the report from Kevin Sabet and Project Sam. They've issued a report declaring what a disaster legalization has been over the past 2 years. We're going to take a look at all those numbers and show you why it's a bunch of making mountains out of molehills and taking things out of context. So when somebody confronts you with this information, you'll know how to fight back. It's all coming up today on the Russ Melville Show and Toker Talk Radio. Thanks for joining us in our new high definition resolution. We hope you're enjoying this in high definition. We're back with the news right after this.
Marijuana Nation.
420 Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
Big Daddy Think.
Funky Rollerade.
Oh yeah, this is Big Daddy, and I'll be your freakazoid every Thursday night, right here at the Funky Roller Rink.
Funky Roller Rink.
11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, only on RadicalRuss.com.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is an entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. Radical Russ has been prepping for this debate full-time since 2005. The Russ Belleville Show.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belleville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, January 6, 2015. A state representative has introduced a bill that would legalize recreational marijuana use in Arizona. The bill, House Bill 2007, would allow anyone 21 or older to legally possess up to an ounce of marijuana. Someone 21 or over could legally grow 5 marijuana plants, and up to an ounce of marijuana could be exchanged between of-age consumers, but could not be sold. A tax of $50 would be levied on every ounce transferred from a grow facility to a retail store. 50% of the tax would go into Arizona's general fund, 30% would go toward education, the remainder would go to public health and educational programs. Public smoking would continue to be banned, and landlords would have the right to ban not only cultivation, but also consumption of marijuana in their rentals. Employers would still be allowed to discriminate against marijuana consumers in hiring. The group gathering signatures to legalize marijuana in Mississippi has scheduled a town hall meeting Friday at Eudora Welty Library in Jackson to answer questions about its ballot initiative, and the petition will be available for signatures. The ballot initiative, if approved, would allow the use, cultivation, and sale of cannabis and industrial hemp for persons 21 years or older. Mississippi for Cannabis will try to collect more than 107,000 signatures of registered voters to get the ballot initiative measure on the November 2016 ballot. The group's town hall meeting is scheduled from 2 to 3 p.m. on Friday at the downtown library. Kelly Jacobs, sponsor of the initiative ballot effort, said the group has until October 2, 2015 to collect the needed signatures to get the measure on the November 2016 ballot. If not, they have until December 29th to gather sufficient signatures of registered voters to get the measure on the November 2017 ballot. Colorado yesterday began a $5.7 million advertising campaign for marijuana awareness. The campaign, entitled Good to Know, is aimed at educating the state's citizens without alienating them. The state of Colorado is spending $5.7 million to educate citizens about the responsible use of marijuana in a major public campaign beginning this month. The Good to Know initiative will utilize radio broadcasts, newspapers, and the internet, USA Today reports. The campaign apparently has a folksy and relatable tone to it, with one of the radio spots featuring a rhyming cowboy and banjo music. Colorado's chief medical officer, Dr. Larry Wolk, says its goal is to educate without alienating. According to a survey on marijuana use and perceptions done along with the campaign, only 27% of Coloradoans realize it's illegal to smoke marijuana in public, and only 23% know that one must be 21 years of age to purchase it. Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes backs home grows, marijuana lounges, and a clampdown on medical marijuana. In his memo entitled Moving Marijuana Policy Forward, Holmes writes that, quote, all adults age 21 or older should be allowed to grow a small number, up to 6 marijuana plants for personal use, and to gift for no remuneration a small amount of personally harvested marijuana to another adult age 21 or older. This would A, further reduce the need for valid documentation that fosters medical marijuana authorization mills, B, bring Washington's marijuana law into line with the other 3 states to legalize marijuana for adult use, and C, establish more equity between marijuana and home beer brewing and winemaking, end quote. Holmes also calls for marijuana use lounges that would permit vaporizing or eating marijuana in order to alleviate enforcement of laws against public use. At least one marijuana delivery service is openly selling pot in South Central Alaska more than a month before the ballot initiative that legalized recreational marijuana use in the state officially goes into effect. Quote, technically we're acting rogue, but look forward to being legal soon, end quote, reads the website of Discreet Deliveries, which offers to drop off up to an ounce of marijuana to paying customers in Anchorage and the Matanuska Valley. Quote, what he is doing is not legal, said Cynthia Franklin, director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, which is overseeing implementation of the initiative. He could be criminally prosecuted, end quote. Anchorage Police Department Chief Mark Mew agreed, saying, quote, people who jump the gun on this issue do so at their own risk. We can never give people permission to break the law. The marijuana laws in Alaska have not yet changed. People who break the current laws are still subject to being prosecuted, end quote. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, January 6, 2015. I'm Russ Belville. You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org. International Cannabis Business Conference is coming to the Hyatt Regency Hotel in San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, 2015. Don't miss this exclusive opportunity to hear from the experts on the future of marijuana commerce, including scientists like Dr. Carl Hart, Dr. Amanda Ryman, and Dr. Stanton Peel, policy experts like Ethan Nadelman from Drug Policy Alliance, Anthony Johnson from Oregon's Legalization Campaign, travel author Rick Steves from Washington's Legalization Campaign, and California legalization pioneer Dale Sky Jones. Business experts like Harborside's Steve D'Angelo, ArcView Group's Troy Dayton, and UFCW union leader Dan Rush. Cannabis journalists like Ricardo Baca, Steve Bloom, and Doug Fine, and California Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, plus many, many more. Tickets are on sale now at internationalcbc.com, but hurry, last year's conference in Portland, Oregon was a sellout. International Cannabis Business Conference, San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, internationalcbc.com. Normal stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
Welcome back, everyone. 14 after the hour. And today, as we go behind the headlines, we take a look at the state of Ohio, where there's an opportunity here to legalize marijuana, but one that must give us all pause because it might just legalize a marijuana monopoly. As we continue to watch the emergence of these new legal marijuana markets across the country, it's pretty instructive for us to look at another so-called vice, gambling. Now, it used to be games of chance, when I was growing up, were relegated to Nevada and Atlantic City. That's it. But now, it's hard to find any state that doesn't have some form of gambling, and it could be riverboat casinos or tribal casinos or even just a state lottery. And one place that gambling took hold recently is Ohio. In 2009, the state passed a constitutional amendment. It was known as Issue 3, and it legalized gambling with a catch. The organizers of that initiative pushed to make legal, quote, only one casino facility at a specifically designated location within each of the cities of Cincinnati, Cleveland, Columbus, and Toledo, end quote. The casino initiative was bankrolled mostly by a corporation called Penn National Gaming, Inc. They're a company that runs 20 casinos nationwide, including, unsurprisingly, the four constitutionally mandated casinos in Ohio. And they put about $32 million into the campaign for Issue 3 back in 2009. Penn National now has a guaranteed constitutional monopoly on casino gambling in America's seventh largest state. That's it. One casino each is written into the Constitution only. One in Cincinnati, one in Cleveland, one in Columbus, one in Toledo, and this one company owns them all. Seventh largest state in the country. Now, $32 million is what it cost them to do the ad campaigns and lobbying and everything to get this constitutional amendment, to get the signature gatherers paid for and all of that. What do you suppose that investment paid off for them? Well, in the first two full years of casino operations in Ohio, 2013 and 2014, those four casinos had adjusted gross revenues, and that means all the money they took in minus what they had to do for promotions, right? And of course, they minus what they gave out, what people won, right? Their gross just adjusted revenue, $1.5 billion. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Yeah, 500 times investment on your money. That's not so bad. $32 million gets you $1.5 billion. That's a great bet. Now, like this casino amendment, the people that are behind this amendment in Ohio to legalize marijuana are basically trying to push the same idea. Wealthy backers would be writing in their properties as the 10 sites, just 10 statewide, that would be allowed for cultivation of marijuana for sale. And once those 10 growers are locked in, nobody else in the state could cultivate and sell cannabis legally. How nice is that to be able to be one of the 10 growers that writes yourself into the Constitution and have no competition whatsoever? Now, people are calling this a cannabis monopoly. Technically, it would be a cartel, unless one entity is owning all 10 of the sites. But it appears from the news reports I've been reading, it is a conglomerate of growers or wealthy interests. So a cartel. The difference would be negligible. Now, the editorial board of one of the major newspapers in Ohio, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, isn't sanguine about the proposed initiative's chances. I don't think it's got much of a chance to pass, but if it did, they say, quote, if the marijuana amendment arrives as advertised, it would be anti-competitive in the extreme, creating an anti-competitive constitutional monopoly, cartel, aimed at enriching a tiny number of landowners, seems like the exact wrong way to go about any conceivable marijuana legalization, end quote. Now, I have to also make a mention that I wrote this up for High Times Magazine, and in my write-up, I misidentified the group that's behind this. And apparently this group that's behind this is purposefully being shifty about its name and who they are to try to generate some confusion and kind of cloud over what they're doing. Apparently there's three groups trying to change laws in Ohio. One is the Ohio Rights Group. That's John Pardee's group trying to bring medical marijuana. They failed to get enough signatures in the last go around. They're still trying again. There's another group that I think the people behind that are Don McAdams and my friend Tanya Davis from Ohio. They're trying to do a regular old legalization like what you'd see in Colorado or Oregon or Washington. And it's this third group. Now, the second group's called Responsible Ohioans for Cannabis. And I think you can look at them at responsibleohioans.org, I think. It's this third group, these cartel monopolists, whatever you want to call them, that have named themselves Ohio Responsible something and kind of made a confusing name. So I want to apologize to Responsible Ohioans for misidentifying them. It's been corrected up on High Times and the proper link to responsible Ohioans is now up there on High Times magazine. I regret the error. I misread, and it was kind of unclear in a couple of the stories that I was reading, but I hope we got that all cleared up, and vote no on constitutional monopolies.
Unbelievable.
I completely agree, Mr. Cowell. It's unbelievable that someone would try to write their own marijuana monopoly into a state constitution. You know, I often wonder, what would be a deal breaker for legalization for me? Would there be a legalization I'd vote against? This one might be it. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got a report from Freddie Farrakh. Stay tuned.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Connect with 420radio.org through social media, on Twitter at 420radio.org, and our Facebook page at 420radio.org. Follow us and like us today. You'll be glad you did.
Hey, tokers and tokettes, Radical Russ here for the Canador, a practical solution to keep herbs from drying. The Canador is the perfect airtight storage system for your fine herbs. From the half-inch thick walnut and cherry wood construction, clear-top perforated jars for storage, and the humidity bead system that keeps your herbs at a perfect 65% relative humidity. I keep all my herbs in the Canador, and you should too. Check out Canador.com for more information.
Stupid Prohibition Story.
As a public service, the Russ Belville Show reminds you that smoking marijuana does not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana, and prohibition is always waiting for another victim. Learn your lesson from today's Stupid Prohibition Story.
With your Stupid Prohibition Stories, I'm old-timey 1920s radio reporter Freddie Farrakh. This just in from the Tampa Bay Times. John Balmer is accused of possessing drugs, but you can't call him a liar. When he was arrested at a Kmart in Hudson on Monday, the Pasco County Sheriff's Office in Florida said Balmer, age 50, had a black shirt on. Across the chest, it said, "Who needs drugs?" Below that, it said, "No, seriously, I have drugs." And the sheriff said, "He had drugs." In a photo taken at the time of his arrest, Balmer of Spring Hill is seen scowling in front of a stuffed animal claw game outside the store. According to an arrest report, he was in line at Kmart when a deputy walked in. Balmer saw the deputy and tried to hand a, quote, "bag of green leafy substance," end quote, to the person behind him, according to officers. That person declined to take the bag. Balmer then allegedly walked to the cash register, put the baggie on the ground, and paid for his items. Another deputy approached. Store workers told him about the baggie. Deputies discovered it held marijuana and methamphetamine. Balmer declined to speak after his arrest, but perhaps a t-shirt is worth a thousand words. No further information was immediately available. I'm Freddie Farrakh with your Stupid Prohibition Stories. All right, now that's a whole heaping helping of stupid. Oh my goodness. So you got to see the link here. I'll post this in the chat room. It's on tampabay.com. And if you're in the chat room, go check it out, because the picture of the guy is really worth a thousand words. It's, who needs drugs? No, seriously, I have drugs. You know, I was also perusing the internet the other day, and I found one of those BuzzFeed lists or Laugh Feed or whatever the hell it's called. And it was the ironic mugshot list. And it's like the guy who's drunk as shit, arrested for a DUI, has a t-shirt that says drunk as shit. You've seen these, haven't you? Right? So, oh my goodness, people. Quit making it so easy. Thank you, Freddie Farrakh, for all of the information on that story. All right. Also want to remind folks that our interview with Harry Smith from CNBC yesterday, Marijuana Country, the new documentary, it debuted last night, and I hope you got a chance to see it. I think it was pretty good. You know, it just seems there's so many of these shows anymore, and I begin to wonder, you know, how much of how much oversaturation there might be in some of this. Have people had enough of these? How many of these shows can there be? That's the question, you know, we're going to see. But here's a look at the show from last night. We've got some of the clips for you. As soon as I can pull these up, having a little problem with the computer here. But here's a clip from last night's Marijuana Country, the Cannabis Boom on CNBC.
The truly large black market is the extent to which we're becoming the supplier of marijuana in states where it's illegal. So we are the black market for Nebraska, Wyoming, Utah, and apparently up to 40 other states in the United States that have indicated to us we've seized Colorado packaged marijuana.
You're the New Mexico.
We are. At least with marijuana, we're competing with Mexico.
Colorado, where the grass is greener, the candy sweeter, and the money's a whole lot richer.
We did about $4.5 million last year.
What do you think you're going to do this year?
A little over 9 million.
CNBC cuts through the smoke surrounding the legal pot scene.
People are getting to be connoisseurs. It's like wine.
And the thriving black market.
You're the New Mexico.
We are.
CNBC returns to Marijuana Country, the Cannabis Boom. Premieres Monday, January 5th at 9 on the fastest growing cable network in primetime, CNBC.
Jackson is already getting Charlotte's Web.
So that's how he takes cannabis.
You know this is making a difference.
I've seen it work. My son would probably be dead today if it wasn't for cannabis. This isn't about getting high. This isn't about using marijuana. This is about giving a child and anybody with an illness or a disorder the opportunity to have compassion, to have relief, to not feel pain.
Colorado, where the grass is greener, the candy sweeter, and the money's a whole lot richer.
We did about $4.5 million last year.
What do you think you're going to do this year?
A little over 9 million.
CNBC cuts through the smoke surrounding the legal pot scene.
People are getting to be connoisseurs. It's like wine.
And the thriving black market.
You're the New Mexico.
We are.
CNBC returns to Marijuana Country, the Cannabis Boom. Premieres Monday, January 5th at 9 on the fastest growing cable network in primetime, CNBC.
But perhaps the most popular alternative to smoking pot is eating it.
Tastes like candy, just like a pixie stick. Not for children, though.
And the array of choices is staggering.
Chocolate, candy, drinks. We have these incredible bars, which are ranging from 25 to 100 milligrams.
What are these things that are right here?
These are our Dixie Rolls. Yeah. These are our chocolate products. Right. We also make a very high-quality truffle. We make what's called a Colorado bar.
Chuck Smith is a co-founder of Dixie Brands. Dixie wants to be the General Mills of edible marijuana.
I still want to reinforce that Dixie is the iconic brand.
We are the largest, what are called infused products manufacturer in the state of Colorado. We make all types of consumable products, food products, they may be sodas, tinctures, mints. We also do topicals, lotions, and salves, and balms, all infused with cannabis.
Dixie has been supplying the medical market since 2009. But in the first 2 months of 2014, Smith says Dixie's revenues jumped 500%.
Colorado, where the grass is greener, the candy sweeter, and the money's a whole lot richer.
We did about $4.5 million last year.
What do you think you're going to do this year?
A little more than $9 million.
CNBC cuts through the smoke surrounding the legal pot scene.
People are getting to be connoisseurs. It's like wine.
And the thriving black market.
You're the New Mexico.
We are.
CNBC returns to marijuana country, the cannabis boom. Premieres Monday, January 5th at 9 on the fastest growing cable network in primetime, CNBC.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the Ustream video app for Android and iPhone. Go to rad-r.us/420Ustream or just click the Ustream app icon for Android or iPhone below the live radio feed at 420radio.org. Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about seven people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net.
NORML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
The cannabis community is a diverse set of people from all walks of life, conservative and liberal, black and white, straight and gay, rich and poor, and everyone in between. Learn more about the people we are freeing from adult marijuana prohibition in our cannabis community chat.
One day, an unarmed African-American man is minding his own business. The Metropolitan Police are convinced he's up to no good, and they rush him. He tries eluding them, but he's outnumbered, and they pin him to the ground. Despite his protests of innocence, the police cuff him. They witness the prone black man exhale his last breath of air. There is no indictment of any of the police officers in the man's death. In 2014, the death of Eric Garner in the chokehold of NYPD police officer Daniel Pantaleo was another tragic flashpoint in America's long, bloody history of civil rights evolution. But the preceding story describes a different tragic death 20 years earlier. On March 25th, 1994, the Boston Drug Control Unit raided the apartment of 75-year-old Methodist minister Asseline Williams. They chased him into his bedroom and cuffed him. While on the ground, he had a heart attack and died. The police were acting on a tip from a drunken informant who misremembered the location of an apartment he'd visited that was filled with weapons and drugs. The killing of Michael Brown by police officer Darren Wilson one hot August night in Ferguson, Missouri, shocked the nation. The overreaction by Ferguson police to the protests that followed, the use of tear gas, SWAT teams, and armored vehicles, caught many observers by surprise. But for anyone following the war on drugs for over four decades, the death of yet another unarmed black man and aggressive militarized policing seems to be the inevitable result of drug prohibition. Now, that the war on drugs is enforced disproportionately against the minorities and the poor, well, that seems incontrovertible. Groups like the American Civil Liberties Union and the Marijuana Arrest Research Project have documented how African Americans and Latinos are far more likely to be arrested for drugs, more likely to be convicted for drugs, and more likely to serve a longer sentence for drugs. Often, these statistics are provided with the counter that blacks and whites use drugs at the same rates. Actually, it's worse than that. According to the most recent government surveys for all ages, 10.7% of all African Americans and 9.5% of all white Americans have used some illicit drug in the past month. But that use statistic doesn't reflect the fact that young people are the ones usually arrested for drugs. People under age 25 make up 43.3% of all drug arrests, according to the FBI's Uniform Crime Report for 2013. In that age demographic, 17.8% of whites and 16.5% of blacks used an illicit drug in the prior month. And that's according to the National Survey for Drug Use and Health for 2013. So we actually have a situation where proportionally more white people are using drugs at the ages when most drug arrests happen. Yet black people are much more likely to be busted. Now, if you're over a certain age in America, the first media stereotype you associate with Italian Americans isn't Super Mario or the Jersey Shore. It's The Godfather or The Sopranos, the portrait of the Italian American as the mobster. Now, of course, very few Italian Americans match any sort of Don Corleone or Tony Soprano archetype, or Luigi and Snooki for that matter. So how did this Italians run organized crime stereotype begin? Well, the prohibition of alcohol in the 1920s coincided with a wave of some 4 million Italians immigrating to America since 1880. As every wave of immigrants has been, the Italians were treated as second-class citizens, and opportunities were scarce. For some, like an Italian immigrant's son named Al Capone, the promise of prohibition profits presented him an offer he couldn't refuse. Trafficking in illegal alcohol, however, meant Capone and his colleagues had to protect themselves with violence and weapons. The police, facing an increasingly armed set of organized criminals, had to increase their weaponry. Raids had to be conducted in the dark of night, and sometimes innocent people got caught up in the crossfire of gun battles in the streets. Fortunately for America, we recognized that alcohol prohibition was doing nothing to stop drinking and everything to empower violent criminals. We ended alcohol prohibition after only 13 years of it being associated with violent crime and poor immigrants, largely Italians and Irish, who ran the big city alcohol trafficking mobs. So over 80 years ago, just 13 years of American prohibition crime still fuels the stereotype image of the mobster as Italian, despite the existence of mobsters of all ethnicities. What do you suppose 4 decades of drug war has done to shape the perceptions of black men by police charged with enforcing the modern drug prohibition? Drug prohibition itself was born of anti-immigrant racism against opium-using Chinese and Mexican marijuana users, and racism against cocaine-using blacks who were gaining visibility in the cities where jazz and blues music took root. Drug prohibition today fosters a systemic racism that has more black men under correctional control today than were enslaved in 1850, and more unarmed black men killed by police than lynched by Klansmen. Recently, researchers tested people of all races with a social science experiment. Images were quickly flashed on a screen that showed 2 men in a confrontation. The men could either both be white, both be black, or one was white and one was black. Sometimes one of the men is shown holding a weapon. Sometimes one of the men is shown holding a non-weapon, like a cell phone. And sometimes they're holding nothing at all. The subjects then were asked to recall which man, if either of them, held a weapon. Consistently, people would over-criminalize their memories against the black man. A black man with a non-weapon was more often thought to hold a weapon. People would even recall the black man holding a weapon when it was the white man who held the weapon, or even if neither of them held a weapon. This pattern held true, by the way, regardless of the race of the subject. That is, even black people were more likely to over-criminalize black people. There is more than prohibition to blame for this, and other factors in racism. The enduring legacy of slavery, segregation, and Jim Crow forced black people into the lowest economic classes and redlined them into the worst neighborhoods with the fewest resources. And where poverty and desperation exist, crime thrives. There are many reasons why NYPD patrols Harlem more than the Upper West Side, and one of them is that there is more street-level crime there that is easier to prosecute. So today, after 40 years of police making millions of low-level drug arrests and young Black and Latino men fighting against the violent battles between increasingly armed Black and Latino gangs to control the street trade, and watching television saturated with criminal Black men on the news and cop dramas, is it any surprise Americans associate violent criminality with dark skin? Now, that's a prejudice that existed before the war on drugs, to be sure, but the prohibition amped up the scare of the violent Black criminals because of the actual violence born of a criminal business, and that kind of violence is what makes the evening news. In 2010, the Village Voice, newspaper in New York, reported on a former NYPD cop who had secretly taped other officers and superiors at work. What emerged were a series of embarrassing reports highlighting the pressure on officers to meet quotas for arrests and shakedowns. This pressure contributes to the use of stop and frisk, a tactic where police stop young Blacks and Latinos for no reason and subject them to a simple pat-down. When the encounter suggests the subject may be carrying drugs, like the officer smelling weed or feeling a pipe or a baggie in a pocket, the subject is then told to take the items out of their pockets or bags, and once the drugs are in plain view, that's an offense calling for an immediate arrest. As noted, more young white people are using drugs than young Black people. But how and where they use drugs makes all the difference. Young white people are smoking pot in mom and dad's suburban basement like the teenagers in television's That 70s Show. Young Black people are hanging out on the city streets and the parks, where they're easier targets for police. And in addition to making quotas, the war on drugs is also profitable for police departments through the Kafkaesque menace of asset forfeiture. When a person is investigated by police for possession of drugs, that person's cash and property may be seized by police if they believe it was the ill-gotten proceeds of the drug trade. That person doesn't even need to be charged with a crime for their property to be seized. And that property is guilty until the owner can prove it was innocent of being ill-gotten gains. As if free stuff from shaking down real and imagined drug users in minority neighborhoods wasn't enough, there's also the existence of a federal program called the Burn Memorial Justice Assistance Grants. These so-called Burn Grants go to police agencies based on their success in combating crime. Since violent crime and property crime have been decreasing, police have turned to drug arrests to pump up their crime-fighting statistics. Along with the grants, post-9/11 federal programs have been outfitting our local police departments with the armor and weapons of war, supposedly for battling terrorism. That military hardware has been used for years in the service of search warrants for drugs. And then there are the opportunities that drug prohibition creates for police and prosecutors with a malevolent agenda. A cop or a canine claiming they detect marijuana smell is enough to bypass any Fourth Amendment protests against illegal searches. Anonymous tips about drug activity are all it takes for most judges to sign off on no-knock search warrants. And on the occasion one of those raids targets the wrong address and police are forced to shoot and kill an innocent citizen in self-defense, a rotten cop can plant drugs at the scene to justify their actions, as was the case with Katherine Johnston, a 92-year-old Black woman gunned down in her Atlanta home in 2006. America's problems with race were planted in this land 400 years ago when the first Africans were brought over as slaves. Our founding fathers simultaneously declared that all men are created equal and that an enslaved African was only 3/5 of a man. Half of this country fought to secede from this nation to maintain systemic white superiority, a condition that persists, though weakened, to this very day. Ending drug prohibition alone is not going to magically undo 4 centuries of ingrained anti-Black prejudice, but we cannot pretend to begin recovering from America's original sin so long as the drug war system remains in place. Over-policing of Black neighborhoods can't begin to be addressed until Black neighborhoods are no longer fertile ground for statistics-padding, low-level drug arrests. Cops and the occasional armed neighborhood watchman treating every young Black man in a hoodie as a dangerous criminal won't end until violent gangs can no longer subsist on drug trafficking profits. Simply put, drug prohibition creates crime and violence where otherwise little would exist. Economics dictates that the risks of crime and violence will be borne most by the underprivileged. That combination means that whether it is alcohol and Italian mobs or drugs and black gangs, the results of prohibition are always the same. We have a long way to reach forward toward our more perfect union with liberty and justice for all, and we'll never get there as long as prohibition moves us backwards. And by the way, white, as defined by these surveys, is non-Hispanic white, as opposed to non-Hispanic Black African American, non-Hispanic Native American Alaska Native, non-Hispanic Native Hawaiian Other Pacific Islander, non-Hispanic Asian, non-Hispanic multiracial, and Hispanic. Interestingly, when Al Capone's parents immigrated to America, Italians and other Southern Europeans weren't considered white. Be back with the Radical Rant right after our drug war public service announcement of the day.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio. Are you in the market for portable vaporizers now? Get online to vapes.buzz, the quick and easy link to portablevaporizersnow.com. Vapes.buzz has everything you're looking for, including vape pens, herbal vaporizers, e-juice, parts, accessories, and more. Visit vapes.buzz and save 5% instantly, or give them a call at 866-264-2415. Vapes.buzz. Get vaping, baby! In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Kid, I really want to let kids know that illegal drugs are bad news.
Yes, David, it's true. Over 100,000 teenagers were admitted into hospitals last year because of drugs.
Yeah, but I'm talking about kids' futures. Did you know that marijuana can affect a person's physical and sexual growth?
Yes, that's quite accurate. In a laboratory test, female animals treated with the active component in marijuana experienced a 44% death rate among their offspring.
This is much more important than facts and figures. What kids should know is that marijuana has got more cancer-causing agents than tobacco. And a lot of young kids use drugs on a daily basis.
Actually, Michael, the fact is that 1 in 18 high school seniors smokes marijuana daily. And then there are the occasional users which account for...
Get this through your CPU. They don't care about statistics.
You know you're right. I've got it. Just tell them illegal drugs are bad, so don't mess with them.
Illegal drugs are bad news.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, firedublawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email firedublawyer@gmail.com.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 49 after the hour, and in the rant today, marijuana's legal. What now? I know for some of you listening in the red states and around the world, marijuana legalization is a long way off, but permit me to wax philosophical a bit on the first world problems that we got here in Oregon. We just got marijuana legalization passed with Measure 91, 56% statewide, and over 70% right here in Portland, Oregon. So the question now is, how should marijuana be legalized? Just today, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, which is statutorily empowered to regulate marijuana. I know the Liquor Control Commission is going to regulate marijuana, but all right, we'll accept that for now. They sent out a SurveyMonkey questionnaire today. You can find it online at marijuana.oregon.gov. And it does my heart good to see a URL with a .gov and a marijuana in it. I love that. Marijuana.oregon.gov. You can take the survey and you don't have to be from Oregon. I imagine they will probably weight Oregonians' responses higher. And it was kind of interesting to me because it offered these five policy areas that they wanted to know in what order I found these to be a priority and or not a priority at all. Four out of five of them were things that I have a problem with. They were things like, you know, keeping marijuana outlets far away from schools and coming up with some sort of DUI limit. And so this was kind of scary to me that these were the first five things that the OLCC thought of, and four of them were anti-consumer. So I believe it's time for us as consumers to start making known what we want in marijuana legalization. So I encourage everyone to visit marijuana.oregon.gov. I sent it out through my Twitter and Facebook and all of those links, but I'll tell you a little bit about what I want to see. First of all, in Oregon, in our Measure 91, we specifically made the state the sole taxation authority over marijuana. And that taxation would be $35 an ounce at the grow. So whoever picks up the weed from the grow, there's a $35 an ounce tax paid at that point and only that point. And we learned this lesson by looking at the, effective 27 or 8% tax rate in Colorado and the effective 45 or 46% rate in Washington state, and how that is overpriced marijuana to the point where marijuana dealers hang out in the pot shop parking lots to undercut the tax. That is exactly what we don't want to have happen here in Oregon. So I think it is incumbent on the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and the legislature to ensure that what the people voted for, the state as sole taxation authority at a low $35 an ounce tax, that needs to stay just as it is. Now, there's a lot of cities putting a lot of political pressure on the legislature saying they want their own local pot tax to deal with the costs of regulation and implementation in their city. And I call shenanigans on that because there ain't no local alcohol tax. The legislature needs to, in any of these policy discussions, they need to be asking, what if this were wine? Would this be fair if this were wine? And so trying to say there's going to be a local pot tax because it's going to, you have all these social costs to have to deal with. You can't tell me that while you're shutting down six or seven square city blocks in Old Town Portland every Friday and Saturday night for the drunks. You can't tell me there isn't an enforcement cost there, and yet there's no local Portland alcohol tax. And of course, anyone who'd suggest such a thing would have their head chopped off by the craft beer and wine industry political interests in this state. Another thing that we have learned from the other states, especially Washington state, we have got to have a coffee shop situation. We have got to have some place and some allowance for public use of marijuana. Now, I understand them not wanting to have it on the street corners and all over the place in the parks and such, and I'm even fine with that. But we deserve to have public locations we can go to, cannabis cafes, coffee shops, whatever you want to call them, where we can congregate and use marijuana, especially if we're going to retain the right of landlords to ban cultivation and use in their own facilities. Adults need a place to be able to smoke, and if you don't want them smoking up in your rental apartment, they should have a pot coffee shop they can go if they want to relax and smoke. So we're going to fight for that as well. We also need affirmation of the Second Amendment rights of cannabis consumers. Currently, under federal law, it says you cannot, you know, sell guns or ammunition to a known drug abuser, anything that's against federal schedules and so forth. That needs to be updated for Oregon so that Oregon gun dealers and concealed weapons permits and such are allowed for lawful cannabis consuming adults. That needs to be absolutely affirmed. Another concern, the cities would really like the power to be able to ban marijuana shops and marijuana grows. They really want that power. And they actually have that power. Measure 91 does have a local option for a city or a county to vote to ban marijuana licensees. Now, if they do, they lose their share of the marijuana tax pie. That's only fair. But that power of local option bans has to be determined by a vote of the people through the initiative process. That means none of these shenanigans where a city council of five people who hate pot can vote to ban it in an entire city or county. No, you've got to get a vote of the people. If a majority of the people in a city or county vote to ban it, then I think it's legitimate. Just as I think it's legitimate to have dry counties for alcohol in this country, and many still exist, if the locality votes on that, if the people vote on that, that's fine. But no giving power to the city councils or the county commissions to vote by fiat that they can just ban the licensees. Another thing that I think is really important, and this was touched on by Pete Holmes up in Washington State, there needs to be a reconciliation, a merging of the marijuana markets. There is no such thing as medical marijuana versus recreational marijuana. It's one plant, it's one product that should be sold. The idea of maintaining two separate regulatory systems is not only wasteful and redundant, but it also hampers the opportunities for recreational users. If there is only going to be a limited number of places, and especially once bans come into effect, if there's only going to be a limited number of places that will be zoned properly for marijuana establishments, that are 1,000 feet away from schools and churches and parks and playgrounds, that are 1,000 feet away from other marijuana establishments, then it behooves us to have there be just one type of marijuana establishment. We should not divide the possible locations so that some of those locations can only be shopped at by the sick. Because they're certainly not going to turn it around the other way. They're not going to make it so that an adult pot shop won't serve a patient. We cannot have a situation where patients are allowed to shop at all pot shops, but healthy people can only shop at their separate but equal pot shops. That doesn't seem fair or American to me. Now, that does not mean that we throw the patients under the bus or forget about the different needs of patients. I completely support maintaining the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, keeping a card registry system, having that card be a point of sale tax rebate for the patient, have that card be a discount even for certain varieties or high CBD items, allowing that card to maintain the right of the patient to grow 24 plants or have someone grow it for them, to be able to possess 24 ounces, to be able to buy more than 1 ounce at a time at the store. I'm for all sorts of rights and privileges of being a medical marijuana patient, but I draw the line at getting your own separate building to buy pot in. I think that one system can handle all customers and should handle all customers. And when it comes to that system, we also need to ensure that access to marijuana is reasonable. We understand that there's going to be, you know, we don't want it zoned in residential areas, for example, but you can't zone it completely out of existence so that there's only one place across the tracks in the seediest crime-ridden place in town to be able to get marijuana. There needs to be some reasonable access and reasonable hours of operation, too. If we're going to allow bars and taverns to be open till 1 or 2 in the morning, you can certainly allow a pot shop to be open till 10 at night, okay? These and other items will be part of what we fight for as we move forward in legalization in Oregon. Hey, folks, that's all the time we got for today. Make sure you join us tomorrow. Doug Fine joins us on our Hemp Day Hump Day, the first one of 2015. He has been testifying on industrial hemp at the Oregon legislature. We'll get an update from him on how that went and more. Stay tuned for Hour 2. Toker Talk Radio's next. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. For everyone here at 420radio.org, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it.